blood against the body. California.
Wow, wow, wow. Who saw that coming? That was a crazy night of fights. Absolutely blew me away. Truly enjoyable too. So I'm talking about UFC 196 that was headlined with, an exhibition fight at welterweight between Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz came through with an unexpected victory. And also in the co-main event of the evening was a title fight between Miesha Tate and Holly Holm. Holly Holm, the lady who dethroned Ronda Rousey, no longer is the champion. Miesha Tate came through at the fifth round chokeout. Now, this is really unexpected and not good for the UFC. Their business plans revolve around two major people, essentially. That's Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey. Now, the biggest fight for Ronda Rousey was the rematch against Holly Holm, potentially at UFC 200, but Ronda was coming out and saying that her movie schedule's too busy. Plus, she wanted to take a little bit of time off after such a vicious knockout. So Ronda's not available to fight, but still, the fight for Ronda when she came back was the rematch against Holly Holm, and all the experts were saying that fight was going to break all pay-per-view records, go through the roof, and that fight's no longer on the cards. It's gone. It's gone now. A rematch between Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey. Ronda's already beaten her two times comprehensively, so it's not that much of a draw. So the music at the beginning was more of an ode to Dana White and Zuffa and how they feel this morning, as their two cash cows are dead. Not good, not good. But for the fan, incredible night of fights. I say incredible night of fights. I only watched the co-main event and the main event. I said I was going to do so in my preview show, and I stuck to my guns. I fast-forwarded through the first three fights, and you know, you can see what the action is. I press play occasionally and check out what the crowd is saying. And every time I did that, the crowd was totally dead, so I knew I wasn't missing anything. Plus, just now I spoke to my friend and he said to me, he goes, mate, you had the right idea, those fights were rubbish. And I said to him, I was like, surprise, 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 you know, you're not gonna fool me. You can't have Ilir Atifi, John Volante, and also Tom Lawler on a main card of a pay-per-view. It's ridiculous. The UFC really needs to have, they need to introduce tiers into their fight events. It's not good at the moment. They mix it up way too much. It needs to have a clear UFC pay-per-view caliber fighters and then UFC Fight Night fighters. And the Fight Night fighters who excel during those fight nights, they should then be promoted to the pay-per-view card. Instead, they just have like really good pay-per-view fighters on free cards and rubbish fighters on pay-per-view cards. It makes no sense. Let's break down the fight, so let's talk about the main event. Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz. In the preview show, I said that my money was on Conor. I thought he was going to come through and finish him with an uppercut. And the uppercut was landing regularly and hard. He really did bust Nate Diaz up. His face looked horrible at the end of the first round, but you know, Nate's as robust and as tough as they come. But still, actually, like prior to the fight, I know on the Burst review show I said, or should I say Burst preview show, my money was on Conor. But I think it was that night I went back and I watched one of their press conferences. It wasn't the one when they had the standoff at the UFC gym. It was actually the press conference when they had Miesha Tate and Holly Holm there too as well. And I could just see in Nate's demeanor, he wasn't fooling for Conor's mind games. You know, Conor really lays it on thick and comes with you with a verbal assault. And you can see these fighters, they start second guessing themselves and doubting themselves. And it never happened with Nate. It never happened. He didn't rise to it, and he also came back with a couple of good rebuttals himself, and you could see that Conor kind of was shook by that a little bit. And also, this is the first time that I've heard Conor say stuff that he was repeating his previous lines, like, you know, when they had the little scuffle on stage, just like, what you're gonna do, you're gonna do nothing, and a few other things like that as well. And I haven't seen Conor do that before, so that gave me a little inkling that everything's not as it should seem. Plus, on top of that as well, I thought about the fact that Conor's body's not actually cutting weight and getting into fight shape. And I don't know if that physiological process actually has an effect on his psyche and it gets him ready to fight. I think the fact that he was just going in, you know, at comfortable weight, didn't have to do any sort of weight cut, I think that might have messed with him a little bit. And I'm just feeling a little bit too comfortable going into the fight. So I did have my reservations about it. And you know, my dear friend Daniel, who I talked to about the UFC the whole time, I was saying to him, I was like, watch, Nate's gonna do this. And he was like, shut up, Conor's got this all day long. I was like, no, watch, Nate's gonna style on him, man. He's gonna put on a performance. And I was proven to be correct. So even though I did say on the radio show, which to be fair is my, you know, it's my true prediction, I did double guess myself when I went back home, and then I changed my prediction to Nate, and that came through. It just didn't surprise me that when Nate got going and he started hitting Conor and got him on the end of the punches, that they would continue. So like, the first round comes out and Connor's looking good, so is Nate as well. Connor's not really establishing crazy dominance. He's throwing a lot of overhand lefts and punches that are kind of whiffing a little bit and hitting Nate's shoulders and not always connecting, whereas Connor's before, he's one of the most accurate strikers that I've ever seen. So he really had an issue with the height and the reach difference. Prior to this, he fought Jose Aldo, but that fight was over in 13 seconds, so he knocked out the champion in 13 seconds, done, over. You can't really call that a fight. You know, he won and everything, but he wasn't engaged in a fight, so the last fight we could look at that Conor actually had was against Chad Mendes. Chad's like 5'6", and Conor had like an 8-inch reach advantage on him. So he's gone from fighting someone who's 5'6" to fighting someone who's 6'1". That's a huge difference. And also, whereas Conor had a 6-inch reach advantage, he was now at the other end of that. He had a 2-inch reach disadvantage. So this is a huge change up of opponents, and I think Conor underestimated how much of an impact that was actually going to have. So his range was off a little bit. He tried to throw his spinning capoeira kicks, and he actually came out and said that they weren't landing, and they were also a big exert on his energy levels, and they weren't good. But anyways, Conor was he still won the first round. Nate looked like an absolute mess. His eye was cut up. Conor was coming in and really landing some strong uppercuts and some straight overhand lefts as well. But Nate took it. Nate and his brother Nick have one of the best chins in the whole sport. So the first round finishes, you know, as to be expected. Conor's looking good. They actually had a little exchange on the floor as well, and that's always scary, as Nate's a long time Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Conor's not. So whenever it was going to get to the floor, Nate always had the advantage, but Conor managed to reverse, get on top of him, attempted to land some ground and pound, but it didn't really work, didn't come off too well. So that was the end of the first round, and everyone thought things were cool. You know, Nate was coming back occasionally and hitting Conor, but Conor was taking them. He didn't look like he was getting affected too much by Nate's power. But still, Nate was definitely getting some offense off, but nothing considerable. A very obvious 10-9 round to Conor McGregor. And then the second round starts, and it comes out looking a little bit the same. Conor's strategy wasn't too good. It just looked like he was happy to stand and exchange and just win the fight, essentially. He didn't game plan too much. And I think it was maybe like 90 seconds into the fight or something, Nate starts coming off with his punches. Now, I said before in the preview show that the Diaz brothers, they have a pattern of punching. It's like ba-bang, ba-bang, bang, 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 ba-bang, ba-bang, bang, bang. Goes hard and then soft, soft, hard, soft, hard. And then Nate came through with one of his straight punches and caught Conor on the jaw, and straight away he started doing the chicken dance. Fair enough, it wasn't a big example of the chicken dance, but you could see that Conor's legs were no longer securely below him. And Nate's kind of swarmed in a little bit, started throwing more punches, went in for the finish. I think they kind of had some cage work at that point, so Nate was putting Conor up against the cage, trying to throw some dirty boxing in and, you know, land some good offense. And Conor was doing well to defend himself. They then disengaged from the cage. You can see Conor still wasn't cool. He then tried to come back with some offense. Nate took it, then started throwing some more punches, and you could see that Conor was getting really, really lit up on his feet. His balance was gone, his coordination was all over the shot, and the end was in sight. I thought so when Nate landed that first telling punch. I was like, okay, this is it for Conor. This is not going to be good. And then Conor shoots him for a takedown on Nate, which is ridiculous. Conor always said as well, he goes, you know, you say I fight strikers, but every time I hit him, they all turn into wrestlers. And this time the tables were turned. It was Conor who couldn't deal with the striking exchange. He's the one who turned into a wrestler. And Conor's not a wrestler. You know, he's a really good striker, and Ireland hasn't got a history of wrestling either, so his pedigree's not that good. He shot in for a takedown on Nate. Nate stuffed it, gone on top, started landing some, you know, heavy ground and pound, and then took Conor's back, sunk in the rear naked choke, and Conor tapped. And that was that. That was that. Nate Diaz, he beat Conor McGregor. Unfortunately, it was kind of much ado about nothing. It's not like he got a belt or anything, but it did feel like a title victory. And in that sense, you know, the devastating loss for Conor, what did he actually lose? Apart from respect and notoriety and his whole aura, I suppose, he's still got his belt. He's still the champion. He's still entitled to the pay-per-view points in his next fight. So he's actually sitting a little bit comfortable, but still, that mystique of Conor McGregor is now well and truly dead. Nate Diaz took it from him. And he had a great post-fight interview as well. You know, Joe Rogan asked him a question and Nate goes, I'm not surprised, bleep, bleep. You know, whenever Nate talks, it's full of bleeps. But Nate put on a crazy good performance. And as I said, one that didn't surprise me. I'm going to put up with the post as well. The exchange of text messages between me and my friend to kind of prove a little bit that I was backing Nate. No, that's a lie. I'm always backing Conor. I'm a huge fan of Conor. I'm still going to be a huge fan of Conor. And I think that there's a chance that I might actually grow to be an even bigger fan of Conor. To be honest with you, his whole shtick, his getup was wearing a little bit thin. It's solely about money. He couldn't care about anything else. And even though it's cool for a little bit, there's a fine line. that you traverse. I love saying traverse in all my essays, so I might as well say it in one of my little shows. You know, you're on a knife's edge. If you play it a little bit too much, the fans will lose you in a second. We're a very fickle bunch. And I didn't feel that I was too far away with that with Conor McGregor. I thought I could, you know, turn, instead of being a huge fan, I could be like, you know what, I've had enough of him. And I don't think I was too far away, but I think this defeat's going to humble Conor. And I think he took it on the chin. You know, when Ronda lost to Holly Holm, she went into hiding for a very long time. No one saw her. She didn't give a post-fight interview. When she actually came back from Australia and landed at LAX, she put a pillow over her face and refused to talk to TMZ or anything like that. She just went into hiding for ages and, you know, took it so hard that it messed up the rest of her life. Conor didn't do that. You know, he took it on the chin. He hung around in the cage afterwards as well. So when Joe Rogan comes in and gives an interview to Nate Diaz, normally fighters leave the cage. You don't want to be involved in that stuff. But Conor hung around. He hung around. He knew that they were going to want to interview him, and he was happy to give his, you know, his two pennies. That's the same for the press conference as well. Afterwards, Conor turned up and he was honest. He did kind of say that maybe he was a little bit too leery when it comes to the weight classes, and also a little bit too overconfident in his power and how that would translate at welterweight. Because before, Conor was fighting 145 pounds and now he went up to, you know, 170 pounds. That's a 25 pound weight discrepancy. That's absolutely huge. And he didn't look good. His body looked soft. His muscles weren't prominent or defined. So, you know, he's saying afterwards that he's going to possibly go back to featherweight and defend his title, which I thought that if he won this fight tonight, he would have relinquished that belt and concentrated on lightweight. But this has made him a little bit shook. His confidence in his power isn't what it was a week ago, and he's thinking it's all good against people who are 5'6", 5'7", 5'8", but against these, you know, lightweights and welterweights, it just doesn't translate. I need to come up with a new style of fighting. I can't just rely on one strike to knock him out, because it doesn't knock him out, and then what do I do next? You know, it's kind of like all his eggs in one basket. And unfortunately with this fight, it just didn't come through. I don't think the star of Conor McGregor is by any means dead. I don't think it's even going to be dampened that little bit. I think people are going to be, you know, really intrigued to see how he bounces back from this and how he approaches media, you know. And I think he's going to be very, very humble. I think that's going to be an endearing quality as well. So be interesting to see where he goes from this. My predictions are that he'll defend his featherweight belt at UFC 200. Because what else can he do? What else can he do? This whole like idea of him fighting for the belt at lightweight's now gone because he lost against Nate Diaz. Fair enough, it was in a welterweight. I'm doing the air quotes right now. It's in welterweight division. But Nate Diaz is a lightweight fighter. He's had a couple of fights at welterweight before, but he's been beaten up every single time. So even though it was at 170, it's because Nate didn't have the time to actually cut down to 155. So even though it says a welterweight fight, it was realistically a lightweight fight where they didn't have to cut weight. So Conor had a reality check, and I think because of that, he's going to go home with a tail between his legs back to the featherweight division, which is going to be nuts. Because, you know, anyone who's been paying attention to the social medias, they've been showing the before and after photos of Conor when he used to fight at featherweight and how he looks for this fight, and he looked, you know, near on ill cutting down to featherweight. Looking at welterweight, or the, you know, walking around 168 pounds is what he weighed in at, He looked healthy, he looked good. So I feel sorry for him and his body to have to go back and make that cut, but that's what he's going to have to do to continue his legacy. So if anything, there's going to be more intrigue on the Conor McGregor story now to see how it all develops, and one that I'm going to, you know, pay attention to very, very attentively. So it did mess with me. I didn't like it when, as I said, when Nate landed that shot and Conor started moving around the wobbly and everything along those lines, I knew it was over. When that choke got sunk in and then Conor tapped pretty quick as well, what was my reaction like? I was in shock. I wasn't crazily disappointed because I was well happy for Nate. The Diaz brothers have been around for a long time and Nate's been underpaid for a very, very long time. So for this, he's made a fortune. He made 100 grand in bonuses, 500 grand to turn up. He probably got an extra 500 grand to win as well. So there's a mil in itself, and I'm not too sure what the deal was in his contract that the winner gets pay-per-view points or something like that. There's potential that, you know, Nate made $5-6 million in this fight, at least like 1.3. So he's a very rich man now, and he doesn't live an expensive lifestyle either, unlike Conor McGregor. Like, what's he gonna do with all his Rolls Royces and things like that now? I believe it was Matt Brown who said there's gonna be 2 Bentleys up for sale in Vegas this morning. So already there's been backlash with the other fighters looking at him saying, you know what, good for you, I'm glad you got your comeuppance. But, you know, essentially they're haters. As I said, I'm a mad Conor McGregor fan. I'm gonna continue to be so. But if anything, you know, it's gone to prove to the world that the universe, just because you asked, that was essentially Conor's mindset. You know, it was a little bit, I believe it was the Tony Robbins book, the power of yes, or I don't know, something along those lines, the reason, something like that. Essentially, if you believe strongly enough, things will come to fruition. And that was very much part of Connor's mindset. It got him very far, but unfortunately, you know, belief can only get you so far, and then you need to have your practical skills and your physical prowess in check. And Connor just got beaten up by a bigger man. So be very interesting to see where he goes next. But congratulations to Nate. Very happy to see him do that. Very, very happy. He's now kind of like on the level with his boys. As I said, his brother Nick, a longtime champion in Strikeforce, never once won the belt in the UFC, but, you know, a legend in the sport. His big boy, Jake Shields, he used to be a champion in Strikeforce as well and fought George St. Pierre over in Canada in a huge pay-per-view event ages ago. So, you know, Jake's been paid. Gil, lightweight champion in Strikeforce. All his peers have like ascended to the top, and even though this wasn't for the belt for Nate, it felt like a title victory. So yeah, validation once again. You had it for Michael Bisping last week, and you got it for Nate Diaz this week. And now, to be honest, Connor's star's not dead. Nate's has like ascended. So if anything, they've come out with this event with like two stars. So I think it's a good thing. Once the dust settles, it'll be all right. I don't think there's going to be any reason for a rematch. I don't see that happening anytime soon. But I hope that Nate Diaz gets a shot at the lightweight title now. To be honest with you, you've got Khabib versus Tony Ferguson. They're probably the only other two contenders as well. So we'll see how it all fits in. But Nate's up there. He's now a legit star. There's going to be so many people who never heard of him before who are now like, do you know what? He's actually pretty cool. And he's a personality people can get behind. You know, he's very thuggish, very street orientated. And people are going to like that. Diaz brothers are notorious. I didn't even mean that pun, you know, but it's well and truly applicable. So Nate's going to get crazy more fans after this, and deservedly so. So a round of applause to Mr. Diaz. Congratulations on your victory. And it was good to see both of them humbling defeat. Connor and Nate had a little hug afterwards as well, which was nice. And also Connor and Jake Shields shook hands. Now, prior to the, I think it was that they squared off at the press conference, not the weigh-in. They all said beforehand, it was like, I swear, if Connor hits you or touches you at all physically, it's on. We're going to come in and like rush the stage. They're called like the scrap pack, essentially. These guys are known to kick off. They did it before a Strikeforce event, and there was a massive big brawl there. So the UFC were aware that, you know, Nate's peoples are volatile, and they all rush the stage, and Jake Shields was one of them. And Jake and Connor had a little verbal interaction beforehand, talking about like, I'm gonna choke you out, yeah, you wish you can, you this, that and the other. So the end of the fight, Jake and Connor shook hands too. So everyone's cool, everyone's happy. And yeah, just it'll be really interesting to see how the dust settles with all of this and where Connor goes. I don't think he's gonna shy away from the media. I think he'll be talking to them, you know, pretty soon, maybe next week or the week afterwards, and then talk about his plans. But he's already committed to the UFC 200 event in July, so you won't be seeing him before then, but I don't think he'll be hiding away until then. So yeah, be interesting to see what he says. So that was the main event of the night, and it was also, I'm pretty sure, maybe the first time, if not the second time in UFC history, that there's been a main event over a title fight. Normally with the UFC, how it would work is that if there's a title fight on the card, it would main event the card. Now, if there were two title fights in the card, the heavier weight class would main event the card. So that's how they always did it. But then since Conor McGregor's arrived, fighting at 145 pounds, he's been main eventing over middleweights who, you know, fight at 185 pounds. So that totally switched up the script. And then when this title fight fell out, as Conor was originally supposed to be fighting Rafael dos Anjos for the lightweight strap, Conor still main evented the card, so they didn't take him off. So the only title fight of the night was a co-main event, and that was I really enjoyed it. I just spoke to my friend earlier, and he said it was a bit of a snooze fest and this, that, and the other, but I appreciate the Miesha Tate's tactics. Miesha Tate won. Holly Holm was the champion. Miesha Tate was the underdog. Now, I was crazy happy for Miesha Tate. Miesha Tate is like, a good example of this would be is that if Lionel Messi never existed, Cristiano Ronaldo without doubt would be the best footballer of his generation. No one until Neymar came about recently would be able to like hold a torch to him at all. So, you know, unequivocally, number one footballer in the world. Same could be said of Miesha Tate. If Ronda Rousey never existed, Miesha Tate would be the number one female fighter. She was the champion in Strikeforce. You know, she's a very pretty lady, very well spoken, very marketable. So, you know, she would have had loads of money. She would have been an absolutely huge star, but she could never beat Ronda Rousey. Ronda had her the whole time. Like, stars make fights, and for some reason, when them two clash, Ronda comes out on top. But Ronda fought Holly Holm before, and Holly defeated Ronda. And Ronda's approach was very gung-ho. She was constantly going forward into the striker's strikes. So it was an easy fight for Holly to fight because the person who she needed to attack kept running into her. So all Holly was doing was kind of like moving backwards or occasionally planting her feet and then smacking Ronda in the face. So Miesha Tate obviously saw this and took heed of this and applied a whole different game plan. So the first round was very much Miesha Tate keeping a distance, Holly throwing the occasional strike, and Misha trying to exchange back, but always being very, very conscientious of the fact that if she engages too quickly, Holly's going to come through and doing some real, real damage. So it was very tentative first round, but one that I enjoyed the tactical aspect of. So probably I reckon Holly Holm won that, as Misha didn't get the better offense. Holly's strikes when they landed were cleaner. Misha's face was actually a little bit, not bloodied up, but redded up from getting a few strikes to her eye. So yeah, for sure, first round to Holly Holm. Then the second round happens. Misha comes out the gates like a bat out of hell. She really does. She starts throwing some, you know, aggressive strikes and engages strongly. Holly does well to defend, and then I'm not too sure how far into the round, but it was pretty early. I'm going to say within the first minute. Misha Tate ducks under a couple of punches from Holly Holm and then shoots in for a double leg and executes it and takes Holly Holm down, takes the champion down, and absolutely dominates her on the ground. You know, she was caught in half guard, which is when you've got one of your legs over the opponent's like chest and then your other legs kind of stuck wrapped around the opponent's legs. So they've kind of got you, but you've got enough maneuverability to be attacking the upper body of your opponent. So Misha Tate was pretty comfortable in this position. She was doing some good damage and occasionally landing some ground and pound with elbows and strikes. Holly kept shrimping. Shrimping essentially is a jiu-jitsu term. When you're on your back, you kind of like you bring your body together and then you explode backwards, and then that kind of like propels you a little bit. So you close in tight and then straighten up, and it's kind of like bum shuffling on your side, and that helps you move. So she was shrimping to get towards the cage. She used the cage to help her get back up and did very well. Took Misha from like the middle of the cage towards the side of the cage, and Misha Tate clocked this and kind of prevented it just as she was getting close, established a better position, and then eventually took her back and sunk in a choke, a rear naked choke. So Misha Tate's legs were wrapped around Holly Holm's waist. Misha was wrapped around her back as well, and then had her, you know, forearm around Holly Holm's neck. Now occasionally it would go under, but then Holly would duck down her chin and defend it, and then that would happen again. And even though Misha Tate was on top of Holly Holm for the vast majority of the round, and then did threaten a couple of submissions as well, she never actually got sunk in, but I thought she was going to do it. I thought that was the end of the round, and I was quite happy with myself, because in the first preview show I was saying Misha Tate by choke. So I was thinking, oh no way, I'm going to look super cool. But then it didn't happen. End of the round happens, and I think that was probably a 10-8 round for Misha Tate. Now in boxing, a 10-8 round happens when you knock someone down. The minute you knock someone down, it goes to a 10-8. If you knock them down twice, it's a 10-7. That's not the case in the UFC. You can knock someone down and still have a 10-9 round. A 10-8 round is just like pure domination, when the other person's got no offense off at all and you've absolutely just dominated throughout. And that's what Misha Tate did. So I got really happy. The crowd popped massively at the end of that as well. They were all on their feet and everyone was ready for an awesome fight. Now that fight didn't happen. The third round comes out, and then Misha Tate's very timid again, respecting the distance, and Holly's being a little bit more offensive, but not as much as the fans would want. It could be more of a fan-pleasing fight. Misha maybe shoots in for one takedown that round, and Holly stuffs it and pushes her away and just, you know, executes her striking. None of them too powerful, not too many flurries, just, you know, keeping it at the end of the punch, throwing the oblique kicks and occasional body kicks as well. So round three to Holly, and same thing with round four. Very, very similar game plan. And then, you know, we go through to round five, and it's pretty apparent that this is Holly Holm's fight. Misha Tate potentially only won one round. No, well, it was obviously only one run round, but she could have won that round by 2 points essentially. So that would be 2 points to Misha Tate and 3 points to Holly Holm going into the last round. So Misha Tate could have potentially have pulled it back and had a 6-6 draw, but I very much doubt it. You know, I'm not too sure if the judges gave her a 10-8 scorecard or not. I have to go check that. So anyways, going into the fifth, it's pretty apparent that if Holly Holm continues to do what she's doing, she's winning this fight. Misha Tate tried to take her down again and has been unable to do so. Misha said, like, kill or be killed, essentially, going into the fifth, and that's what happened. You know, three and a half minutes in, the same fight was playing out that we had seen for the last 15 minutes. Misha trying to come in for the occasional takedown, Holly Holm being very good at keeping the distance and not allowing that to happen, and then returning with strikes. And then Misha went in for a beautiful takedown. She kind of, like, ran in, locked her both arms around her waist, and then kind of, like, spun round and, like, dragged Holly Holm down with her. So that was kind of like a spinning momentum, got Holly down. Holly tried to get back up immediately. Misha put her legs around her and like dragged her to the ground and then started working for this choke. Now at this point, Holly managed to get back to her feet, and the choke was looking pretty much like it was underneath Holly's jaw. Bear in mind that there's 90 seconds left of this fight, and Holly Holm would have retained a belt if she could have stayed out of this predicament. So yeah, Misha's standing up, Holly's standing up, Misha's on her back, she's you know, trying to put in the choke, and then Holly Holm to try and get out of this. And this is a little bit of an amateur mistake. You know, I'm not saying that I'm a professional by any means, but anytime a fighter goes to execute this type of defense, it never pays off well for them. So what Holly did essentially is like a forward roll. So she's got Misha Tate on her back. She ducks in, rolls forward, and tries to like throw Misha off her back. But Misha just holds on like a dog with a bone. And then they hit the floor. And if anything, that sinks the choke in a little bit more. So Misha's still on her back, goes in for the choke, sinks it in. Holly doesn't tap. She starts flailing her arms around a little bit. I'm not too sure she was looking for the tap, but she got choked out unconscious. And Misha Tate was deemed female bantamweight champion of the world. Something I was so happy to see her achieve. She, as I said before, she really does deserve it. She's pretty classy. She's pretty classy. Whereas in Ronda Rousey, even though I'm a huge fan, she never displayed that class. She was very aggressive, offensive, in both senses of the word, in her, you know, in her verbal attacks and also her physical ones as well. Whereas Misha always kind of like played it straight and was trying to, you know, shake hands and just be cool. So I was so happy to see her achieve that dream of having a belt, getting that title wrapped around her. It just validates a whole career, and for her this is fantastic. It threw the UFC's plans totally out the window, and Dana White was not happy at all. You could see, you always see it in Dana White's face at the end of fights, whether or not he's happy or not with the outcome. And this one, he tried to put a smile over his face, but he knew he just lost out on loads and loads of money. Because if Holly Holm would have won that fight, that she wouldn't have fought again until Ronda Rousey comes back, and then there would have been that rematch, and that would have generated huge publicity, and as a consequence, huge pay-per-view buys, and then huge revenues for the UFC. That fight's gone now. When Ronda comes back, she's going to fight for the title, and the title is now held by Misha Tate. So Dana White said prior to this fight, he's like, I love the fight stylistically, but business-wise, I absolutely hate it. So yeah, he wasn't happy at all. So he sees that cash cow of a fight go, and then sees his number one star in the UFC get defeated as well. So for Dana White, an absolutely devastating night. But for us fans, I think it was one that could be enjoyed all round. Fair enough, maybe the fighters that we wanted to see win didn't win, but you got to take off your hats to the people who did. You know, fantastic performances by both challengers. Both underdogs came through and won as well. So you can only appreciate that and love the sport as well. It's a night like this that made the UFC and being a fan of it worthwhile. The excitement that is produced, I don't get from any other sport, so just fantastic. And that's pretty much all I've got to say about that. I'm not even going to talk about the rest of the card because it doesn't deserve to be talked about. Now, if anyone does want to have like a more in-depth review, I can send you some places. I'd recommend going to bloodyelbow.com and checking out their sixth round with Zayn Simon and Kid Nate. That lasts about half an hour, and that would be really good. You can go to mmafighting.com. I'm pretty sure that Ariel will put up his review show, and that would be maybe about 15-16 minutes with a journalist or two as well, so they'll be talking about that, so that's cool. And then if you want a really in-depth review of everything that happened, I'd say go to sherdog.com. That's sherdog.com, and check out Beatdown After the Bell, and they'll have like a 2.5 hour show and go into crazy in-depth breakdowns. So I've already watched a couple of them this morning myself. That's a lie, I've only watched the sixth round by Bloody Elbow. I hadn't seen the MMA Fighting post show be up yet, and tonight I'll be listening to the Sherdog Beatdown After the Bell show to go to bed to. So all in all, a fantastic night of fights, some surprising outcomes, really enjoyable. Congratulations to the UFC, congratulations to Nate Diaz and to Misha Tate too. So guys, thank you very much for listening to this. I'll see you soon.